Hi, my name is Rachel Carew. I am a 48 years old grey-haired curve model. I'm going to be your host for Out of the Bubble podcast. I started a new career age 46 modelling, and over on social media I found so many amazing, inspiring women over 40 who are really embracing midlife and leaving a trail of inspiration along the way, helping to break down the stereotypical middle-aged barriers. So I thought it would be fun to share them with you. Welcome back to Out of the Bubble. I hope you managed to catch up on all the episodes in series one, but now I'm back with an amazing lineup of women ready to inspire and share their stories with you for series two. So this week we are starting with a triple dose of inspiration as I'm joined by not one but three of the four women who form the Yorkshire Rowers. Not only do these amazing women hold the title for being the first women to row any ocean when they cross the North Sea, but that was just a warm-up practice for going on to complete the Talisker Whiskey Atlantic Challenge, becoming the oldest all-female crew to complete the 3,000 nautical miles in 2016, aged at the time between 45 to 51. So welcome to Frances, Helen and Nikki. And I'm sorry, but we're missing Jeanette today, but I'm sure the three of you will make up for that. So thank you for fitting me in today. First of all, can we start by just each of you introducing yourselves, a little bit about what you do full time and how old you are?
So I'm Frances Davis, and I am 50 last September, and I'm a lawyer full time. I've always worked as a lawyer, and I'd describe myself probably just as a bit of a restless person who keeps coming up with ideas to try and tempt people like Nikki and Helen to do things that they might not otherwise do.
Excellent.
I'm Helen, I'm 48, and I work in communications, and I just like to try something new. So I get a bit like Frances, I get a bit bored very easily, and I like to learn new skills and do new things and meet new people. I love meeting new people. Mm.
And I'm Nikki, and I work with my husband for my sins. We have a small firm, and not what I've always done, but when I had my children, we decided to throw a lot in together. It was a lot easier, but I've done a variety of things in the past, and I'm easily influenced.
I love that.
Obviously.
So whose idea was this initially?
It was my idea.
Was it your idea?
Yeah, I think I just had a feeling as I was in my kind of mid-40s that life was rushing by and I was going to work every day and not really doing anything else. And so I just wanted something to break that cycle, really. I was feeling restless and I was feeling a bit fed up at work and wanted some time out. And we'd all met a few years before rowing.
Yeah, so when you all joined the rowing club, did you know each other before you joined, or had you actually met in the rowing club?
Nikki and I did know each other, didn't we?
Yeah, we'd done a few bits and pieces together, and yeah, our kids were sort of quite friendly, and we didn't know Helen as well, but you got Henry in the same year. Mm. And then we didn't know Jeanette at all. Mm. So Jeanette was a lovely surprise that we met down there on the river in her bright red wellies and her bobble hat.
What made you all decide to join a rowing club? Because that's not something that you necessarily would think of doing when you're busy mums and working full time, to suddenly start trying a new sport.
Yeah, well, I live quite far out of town, so it takes me about half an hour to get to school, and Henry was at school on a Saturday morning, 8 till 12, so I had that time to kill because I couldn't really go home. Yeah. So I remember bumping into Frances and Nikki, and I said, where have you been? And he said, oh, we've started rowing. So I said, oh, I want to do that. So then the next week I turned up and started rowing, and it was that opportunity to do something in that period of time. And I did find it really hard. But the friendship and the bond that we all had, and we just all had such fun every Saturday morning, that kept me going back.
Mm. I'd never really been particularly sporty, and you always see when you're walking through York the beautiful boats going, you know, up and down the river, and I just really fancied it. And when there was an opportunity that, you know, a taster session, I just thought, actually, I want to do something for me and have a couple of hours. And it is beautiful, because I didn't realise it when I tried it out, but actually it does, you do have to concentrate. It's quite complicated as rowing. It's much more technical than you realise, and actually you have to think, so you're not thinking about home or work or the kids, you're just enjoying the river and you're actually just zoning everything out. So it was a nice experience.
It's interesting that you weren't sporty before, but you got to that stage where you thought, actually, I'd like to try something different.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. I think you just, you get to a certain age, don't you? Or the kids, you know, and again, you're tied up at home, like you were saying, that, you know, you're really busy, you're tied up at home and just trying something new.
Yeah, something for yourself.
Yeah.
And had you rowed before? Was this when you joined?
No, not at all. But again, I'd seen, obviously living so close to the river, I'd seen the boats out on the river. And we are lucky that at the school where our children go, there's a parents' rowing club.
Right.
So our children then, as Helen said, started going to school on a Saturday morning. So suddenly we had time at the weekend when we didn't have children with us. And it just was a real natural fit. We'd been talking about it, I think, beforehand, when the new term started. So we just went down and had a go. Yeah. We weren't good, though.
We were rubbish.
Because I have listened to the audiobook and some of the first adventures out onto the river.
We were really shouted at all the time by the cart.
Yes. We always felt we were letting the boat down. Yeah. And
but it was good training for our resilience.
Well, yeah.
So actually, in hindsight, it probably did us the world of good.
Well, Helen used to come out of the boat pretty much every single week, looking like she'd been in five rounds with Mike Tyson. Yeah. She was bleeding on the back of her hands. I don't know how you did that, but you just absolutely shredded your hands every single week.
I know.
Were you once actually escorted back in and ordered off the race?
It wasn't.
There was two occasions actually where we got.
Yeah, I was in that race where we got. We had a cox and we were. And I think the rudder had been squashed.
Right.
So we were kind of going the wrong way across the river. And we just couldn't get the boat straight. So yes, we were told to get off the river because we were endangering our lives and the lives of others.
Yeah. But wasn't there another race that I wasn't in the boat? I don't think where some of our group got disqualified.
That was the one where we couldn't get to
the start line.
I think that was that one, wasn't it? There was one when you and I were there, and again, it was a rudder problem.
Yeah, and always a rudder problem.
Never us. Yeah, and the cox was shouting, and Jeanette was there as well, and she was pulling so hard on her side that she jumped off the seat and came back and sat on my lap. It was very funny, but we weren't ordered off the river, but we didn't.
It wasn't great, was it?
The
race.
But that makes it, to me, that just made it even more amazing what you'd achieved, because you started right from the beginning.
Yeah, we did.
You didn't walk into this with years and years of experience, like lots of people that take part in it have. To then go on from that to suddenly thinking you could take on this challenge is massive, but amazing. What gave you that confidence to think, yes, we could do this?
Well, I think at the moment of agreeing to do it, it was alcohol that gave us the confidence. But we always believed from the very beginning, as soon as we decided we were going to do it, none of us ever had a moment's doubt that we would do it.
Which is quite weird in a way.
I know.
It is.
I think that was a first for me, because I'm always the one that thinks, oh, maybe you can't, or, you know, something like that.
And actually, I think it's because it was the four of us, and I think because we're all very different people, we all bring different skill sets, so we all make each other believe that we can do things.
Yeah.
So I think that had a lot to do with it. I think if I was doing it on my own, I think I would have had more doubts.
Yes.
I think
because we had the four of us.
I think the fact that we were so positive about it, I think it was the right time to do it.
Yeah.
You know, I think we must have just really wanted it so much.
Yeah. What about, so the four of you were on board with it, this is what we're doing. What about everybody else around you, husbands, parents, friends? How receptive were they to the idea?
Yeah, my husband was fine. He didn't really like it as an idea, but he was fine with it. And he said, if you want to do it, then do it. But your experiences were a bit different.
Yeah, my husband was, because obviously I was going to be away for 3 months and my salary pays for a lot of things. Mm. So he was worried about how we were going to afford to do it and how I was going to take the time off work. Mm. So that was his main concern and the danger.
Yeah.
But when we went down to Charlie Pitcher to look at our boat, he then met Charlie Pitcher, and that's when his mindset was completely turned around. And he said, you've got to do this. This is such an opportunity. You've got to do it. And then from then on, he was very, very supportive.
Because it's difficult for women, isn't it? Because you do have that extra, not burden, but you have that extra responsibility.
Yeah, well, who's going to look after the children? How are you going to earn the money?
Yeah.
All of those things where if you'd thought about it logically, you'd have said, I can't do it, but we just knew that things would work out, and they did.
Yeah. Did you have that guilt Did you carry guilt about doing it? Did you feel...
I didn't actually. No, I didn't feel guilty at all. I just felt like... I didn't feel guilty.
That's good though, because lots of women carry guilt around.
No, I didn't at all, because for me, because luckily my children were interested in it, so they were involved. I wanted to involve them every step of the way. So I think that I gave them, as a mother, so much more because they came with me on this experience. They met some really inspiring people. Even when we did the North Sea, they met Perfecto, they met Greg, and they just absorbed all their positive energy that these people have. And so I felt like I was giving them a lot that I wouldn't have given them if I'd said no.
Yeah. And also the fact that you were really inspiring role models to your kids yourselves, you know, for them to see their mums going off and do that is something that they'll carry into their adulthood, won't they?
It's certainly amazing. And I did feel, I don't know that I felt guilty, I felt as though I was being a bit selfish sometimes. Mm. But like Helen, they got so much more out of it than they lost by us just not being physically present for 3 months. Mm. They didn't, you know, they didn't really miss us that much.
They didn't miss us at all.
Mine didn't.
They only missed you, I think, when obviously Dad wasn't going to give them what they wanted. Yes. And when they normally went to Mum to try and get it. They live in the moment.
Do you think it's something that does stop women from trying different things, though?
Absolutely. The amount of women we've met at literary festivals who have read the book and then have said, you know, I never thought that I could do something like this, but reading your book, I now feel that that's given me permission, that it's not a negative thing. I think loads of women say no.
Yeah. What would you say to them? What would you say to those women that say no to doing things? What advice could you give them?
What I found is that I'm not very good at asking for help very often. So very often I think a lot of people maybe don't do things because they don't know how they'd cope or how their kids would cope, or other people around them would cope. Mm. But actually, it's amazing when you ask for help how many people want to help you and support you. And so that meant a lot to me, because actually now I just ask for help all the time if I need it, because I know that people are so willing to give, because you're willing to give as well back, you know, and share that. And I think sometimes it's hard for women because they don't see how everything around them could cope while they're away. But there is that big support network that will support them and help them get out there. So I'd say just ask for help, say that you want to do something and say, how can I get there and who can help me?
Yeah.
And it's amazing who responds.
Because you had a lot of obstacles to overcome to get to even getting into the race, didn't you?
We had the money to raise.
Exactly.
We had a huge amount of corporate sponsorship to raise. And that was really hard, wasn't it? Because people just didn't think we were going to do it. So they didn't want to help us in the sponsorship way. But we did it in the end.
Yeah.
But it wasn't easy.
Yeah.
And we literally got the last money as we were literally getting the boat on, at the start line. It was really difficult.
When we came back, really, wasn't it? But we finally got everything.
Did you get any negative kind of feedback from people about, why are you doing this? You're never going to do it. Did you get a lot of negative comments, or was everybody really supportive?
I think there were some people who, for the right reasons, were worried for us. Mm. You know, my brother still lives in the house that I grew up in, and I was talking to one of our old neighbours, and he thought we'd be dead by Christmas.
Brilliant.
But he didn't say that to me until afterwards, you know. So I think there were some people who just thought we were on a frolic, we'd be home or not by Christmas, and it just wasn't going to work. But they were kind enough not to say that to our faces. I think there were one or two people who will have said behind our backs, they're idiots, what they think they're doing, they've bitten off more than they can chew.
Yeah.
But again, I didn't really... I heard about that afterwards, not before.
Mm.
Most people would just... Actually, most people, 99.9% of people, are really lovely.
Brilliant.
And they were really lovely to us and wanted to help us and wanted to support us. But as Helen says, it was really difficult to get any significant corporate sponsorship.
Yeah, because it is a very male-dominated arena as well, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, everyone struggled with sponsorship, but it did seem that some of the male crews found it easier to get sponsorship than the women. I don't know if that's changed now, but it did seem really difficult.
But we got the most publicity, and I think we used the fact it was it's like inverted sexism. So we got all the publicity, whereby a lot of the dads who were dads doing the race didn't get any because they were men.
Yeah.
So we kind of used that really to our advantage, and we managed to raise a lot of money for charity, I think, because of the publicity that we got.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I don't blame you.
Yeah.
How did you feel when you were literally just setting off? Was it the 26th of December you actually left?
20th.
Yeah. How did you feel when you were literally just going off?
Terrified.
Scared. I was just thinking I was going to be sick for 5 days.
Well, you knew you were going to be sick.
You didn't think you were going to be. You suffered
really badly, didn't you? Yeah. Seasickness.
Yeah, so I just wanted to go. So when we were delayed for 5 days, you all seemed to be enjoying your 5 days holiday. And I couldn't enjoy it. I just wanted to go because I knew I was going to be really ill. So I just wanted to get that over with.
Yeah. Was there ever a moment when you thought, oh God, you know, what have I agreed to? Why am I doing this?
I think there were a few moments like that, but they passed quickly.
Right.
And that was partly because we were a team. Yeah. I think they wouldn't have passed quickly if any of us had been doing it solo.
Yeah. Mm.
But we just cheered each other on, didn't we?
And we were busy all the time, and we were together all the time. So
we were in this weird bubble, I think, of positivity.
Yeah.
So because we were all in this weird bubble, I didn't feel that any negative thoughts came into my head.
Mm. Well, I guess because you were literally doing 2 hours rowing, 2 hours rest, weren't you, for the whole duration. So I guess you didn't really have a lot of time to...
We didn't have a choice. No. We just had to get on with it and enjoy it.
Yeah.
Well, enjoy it in some other time.
But that did, by breaking it down, if we'd set off thinking every day, oh, it's 3,000 miles to go, it's 2,980 miles. We couldn't think like that, so we broke it down into 2-hour sessions. And that meant the days did kind of whiz
they
by,
did whiz
really.
Because that's the thing that really surprised me, because when I read it, and I was thinking, that's really monotonous and hard going day after day.
It was a bit samey.
There was a bit of boredom that crept in.
But the days didn't drag though as days. Mm. It's just that, you know, when you've been out there for 6 weeks and we were still at least a month away, it's hard to kind of make your mind understand that as the concept.
Mm. There was loads of other stuff happened as well, because it wasn't every day was, although every day was the same, there were so many different things that happened every day. There'd be usually at least one disaster in the day to deal with that we, you know, or night, and then there'd be something else that we had to figure out, or there'd be something that we had to change, or, you know, so there was constantly loads of stuff being thrown at us that was actually different. So it was really monotonous, you know, there was nothing around. We didn't even see that much wildlife.
Mm.
You know, I genuinely, that was the biggest thing I think I was disappointed in. I thought I was going to be seeing dolphins every day and whales, and there wasn't. I mean, it got to the point where it got really excited if you saw anything like that.
Because you did experience a really bad hurricane whilst you were out there, didn't you? Mm. How was that? I can't imagine how scary that must have been.
It wasn't good, was it? I think we were shut up in those little coffins for about 72 hours, was it? So, and you suffered really badly with claustrophobia.
Mm.
So it was, it wasn't good. But again, I just remember thinking, well, this, because we'd already joked about writing a book. And I just thought, oh, this will be a really good chapter for the book or the film. I was thinking, well, I'm glad this has happened, because lots of other crews over the last 2 years since we've done our race have had very, very unremarkable rows.
Right.
Where nothing much has happened. It's been a bit of a mill pond.
Mm.
But for us, we had a very, very fast start. We then had the hurricane. So we had quite a remarkable
journey. It was a turbulent
journey,
crossing, wasn't it, really? We didn't have many flat, calm days at all.
I think is all we had. Although I quite enjoyed it when the storm, the hurricane, you know, Jeanette and I were in the other cabin. We were fine. We could sleep for more than 2 hours, which was really nice, even though it was very squashed.
I see, I can't even imagine that you could sleep when all that's going on
you're
around
so
you.
You're so tired. You are so used to it.
Used to it being, it was very choppy, so the hurricane was just choppier. It was already, you know, you got used to the waves.
Mm. And we chatted and we played games and then we listened to music and then we
chatted
some
more.
Yeah, but we did have quite a nice time, and we had the camcorder as well in our cabin, so we did little video interviews.
I bet they're quite interesting.
That's really cheerful.
We're in the same
boat. You can watch it on YouTube now.
Oh, brilliant. You have stayed really good friends, which I think I read somewhere that 80% of the crews that do this challenge fall out. What's the thing that's kept you all together, do you think?
I think we knew that it was going to be tough to be friends on the row because it's an extreme situation for a long time on a small boat where you can't get away from anybody. So we knew that was going to be hard. So we prepared for that before we got on the boat. So we went with the mindset of looking after each other, not ourselves. So I knew I had three people looking after me. And that change of mindset really made made a massive difference to the boat. And we also communicated a lot on the boat. So we'd have like team meetings and we'd talk about things.
Because you were quite upfront with each other about things, weren't you?
Yeah.
You had to be, because it's really hard. Things annoy you that wouldn't normally annoy you, or you do something that...
Well, your true selves come out on the boat. So in life, you can basically pretend to be somebody else. But on that boat, you can't. So your true personalities are on the boat. So that's just how it is. And a lot of people do fall out because they concentrate on the physical training and they don't concentrate on the mental preparation before they go.
Do you think that's the strength of being an all-women crew as well? The fact that we are good at communicating.
Although sometimes at the beginning, because I think we got better at communicating, I think right at the very beginning, we didn't do the team meetings. Mm-hmm. And we still talked and we got on, but then when things started to niggle and things and you were in your cabin, you'd be sat in your cabin and you'd be worrying that people out on the deck were making decisions and things without you being there. So I think it just got to a point where we said, right, let's just, you know, sit down once a day, have a chat, you know, make sure any decisions that need to be made are done. And that worked really well.
Mm-hmm. I think, yeah, there was one day when I was in, because you didn't like being in the cabin,
I hated being in the cabins.
Nikki would be on deck anyway, and then Helen and Jeanette would be rowing. And I would think, well, I'm left out here. Yeah. This isn't right. And one day I did say, I feel really left out. And then we all said, well, you know, I feel really left out.
But it was after that point, I think,
and we did start having on-deck meetings.
It was much better after that, it was.
I think that's a Yorkshire thing as well. We are up front, aren't we?
Yeah.
As Yorkshire women, I think we are. We say it how it is, which I
and nobody sulked. So when we had disagreements, we'd have a disagreement, and then nobody sulked afterwards, and it was said, and that it was over. So we never had any major, massive fallouts on the boat.
There were just lots of little niggly things, like I would hum.
Oh God,
it drove her mad. No, but obviously on the boat it was my moat coping thing.
She hummed down in Devon.
It must be a concentrated thing, whatever. But obviously it drives her mad. And but I don't realise I'm doing it. So unless somebody raises it,
Gareth would just never go on.
Because I don't think I do it.
I must stress you out.
But that's what it must be. But I think that's one of those things you don't realise. What you're doing impacts other people, and if they don't,
somebody else is going to really get upset about it. I was really messy.
Oh, you were messy.
Yeah.
I'm guessing on a small spaces, there's not
and
a lot.
Jeanette's not here, so we can talk about her. She's just a tidy little isn't she?
No,
she would disappear. I've just tidied everything up for you all. You think, but didn't need tidying.
Yes.
Does anyone need this? I think this is very heavy. I don't think we, you know. And she was Mrs. Sorting.
And I didn't know she was like that.
Well, we did talk and say that when you two, because what we did was we changed the shift, so the two people that were rowing, was it every 3 days?
Yeah, we changed.
Everyone would, one person would row a bit longer, one shorter, and we'd swap, so that you're sharing cabins and sharing. But I remember when Helen and Jeanette had to share for the first time, we both said, ooh, that's not going to work.
I did say that, but actually it did work.
It worked brilliantly because you just didn't care, and Jeanette tied it up after you.
But I was really messy.
You were.
You were clearly four women that were really confident before you set off. How confident were you body-wise? Because let's be honest, on the boat, four women, most of the time wearing very little, nowhere to hide, having to go to the bathroom in front of each other. That takes a different level of confidence, I think.
We just got straight on with it, though, and didn't care at all.
No. We've had children, so I think there's that element where your dignity's already gone out the window years before, so
That didn't bother us, did it?
There was, we do joke and say, actually, if you lined us up from the waist down, we could pick each other out in a lineup. Because you got to see it from every angle. So I decided that it's not very attractive, actually.
And your body hair, Nikki. I know. I couldn't believe it.
I'm quite hairy.
Yeah, that was so funny.
It's like a gorilla. Yeah, it all starts growing everywhere.
And then a day before we came in, we all shaved. Yeah. And we had a proper fabulous. Wash.
We had one disposable razor each. That was our coveted item. Yeah. And we cleaned the bone.
And a sponge that we cut into four.
Yeah. But that was right at the very end. We didn't.
You didn't wash your hair or anything, did you?
No.
But do you know, you didn't need to, because there was no... It did make us feel better. We did say, actually, we wish we'd washed a bit earlier, because actually it did make us feel better. But at the time, I don't remember thinking, I need to wash my hair. Or
I struggled with my hair.
Yeah, you did.
You were all fine, and I just couldn't stand greasy hair. Mm. Couldn't stand it.
It made it easier to plait when it was greasy.
But it went through that and then kind of came out the other side.
Oh, I think really? That's a natural way, you know, for your body and hair, actually.
Do you know, the thing that was the most liberating of all, though, was not having a mirror. Mm. We didn't take a mirror with us, so we didn't care what we looked like.
Or what hair was coming out of wherever.
Yeah, we did.
We just didn't, so we didn't brush our hair, and we didn't put makeup on.
We cleaned out anything we did.
We had oil of Olay every day, didn't we?
Yeah.
But the irony was that we did have a documentary called Four Mums in a Boat, which was screened all over the world. So everybody could see it. So even though we thought...
We didn't know that.
We just knew they were doing some filming.
So when you were in Hamburg and I was in New York and we were watching ourselves on a massive screen.
Yeah. And they've edited out the right bits. But you're still there in all your natural beauty, which actually I thought we all looked lovely.
And then the other irony was that I had this one T-shirt and I decided to customise it and make it into a vest. And I remember thinking at the time, nobody is going to see this top. Nobody will see it. And then obviously I go on BBC Breakfast, they show my everything to the world. And then on the Sun newspaper, there I am with the Sun newspaper with the blue. And I was more bothered about the blue T-shirt than I was about
all the bits.
The pixelated bit
which
down there.
Which you can
there.
See in 27 different countries.
Yeah, so I remember saying to myself, nobody's going to see this T-shirt, so I'll just cut it all
that
off.
That is what comes up if you Google
Hannah Butters. I know, it is so...
Brilliant. I love doing that before.
I think you're famous in Japan, aren't you? Or Australia or
somewhere. Yeah. But it's the T-shirt. I remember thinking in my head,
oh, you looked lovely.
Nobody will see it.
We were all envious of your little cut teeth. I think we all tried to copy it.
It doesn't look very
We were all envious of yours.
Yeah, in fact, you all copied
yes,
me.
Yes, we did.
You?
We did.
But how nice to be able to step away from your professional working lives and looking after the family in the home to go off and do something like that and not have to worry about what you look like or what somebody thinks you dress like.
I felt very privileged.
Mm. Yeah.
I felt very privileged to have that opportunity.
Mm.
It was hard. Life was hard on the boat, but it was simple. Mm. And it was taking out all that complexity that made it a real privilege.
And social media and just news. I think you don't realise what the world around you and all the feeds that you have in, the impact it has on you. And when you take that all away, it's a lot of negative news out there and a lot of negative energy. And actually on the boat it wasn't. It was simple. It was lovely.
So obviously when you came back, when you came into the harbour and you'd finished, I can only imagine how elated you must have felt. But was there a bit of sadness as well that it was coming to an end because of that?
It was the night before, wasn't it?
It was. It just hit us,
We had to put the power anchors. We came in the dark. We came about 20 miles away. We were in the dark. Mm. And we didn't want to come into the harbour in the dark because we got lost in Holland coming across the North Sea.
Helen did, so we had an on-deck discussion.
Yeah, I wanted to come in. Yeah, the reason they didn't want us to come in was because BBC Breakfast were filming our arrival. Okay. That was it.
Yeah. But we were also a bit worried about coming in.
But I just wanted to get in.
Yeah. We had a discussion.
I lost that discussion.
That was a 3-1. But it wasn't mutual.
It was the right thing.
It was the right thing. Other people came in the dark.
It was right. Because actually what a lovely... Because this one of my many lovely memories, this was a special one because we were moored up out. So we put up our anchor out. It was really choppy and horrible.
It was, yeah.
And there was a yacht race going on. So we spent the whole time trying to make sure they could see us because the yachts were coming back into harbour because of the stormy weather, and we put our power anchor out and we were sat there and it's horrible on the power anchor.
It was awful.
You're going up and down and bouncing, it's uncomfortable. All we wanted to do was get off the boat. Mm. So it was that waiting. And I think it was at that point, I know for me, it really hit me that actually that's when it suddenly twigged that this whole 3-year journey was going to end the next day. And actually that was a really quite horrible thought all of a sudden, and I wasn't prepared for it at all. But then the flip side of that, that whole horrible bit, was that Frances got her phone out and decided to, I don't know why he decided to. I
can't believe it still worked.
Yeah, yeah.
But you decided to, yeah, to switch it on and then...
And got all the Facebook messages. Yeah. And it was really bouncy. I was holding on with one hand, yeah, with my phone with the other. I'm just reading through. And lovely messages, yeah, some of them from people we knew, mm, which was great. Mm. And then some of them from complete strangers who... There was a little chain that I'd seen of conversation from my old school friends who were all just in floods of tears, mm, and going, oh, they're 10 miles away, they're this, mm, away. Just really lovely to suddenly pick up on all those, yeah, messages.
Yeah. And she was just reading that. You spent hours, yeah, just reading all of those, yeah, out to us. Nice. And so we had that horrible thing, couldn't come in. And then this, yeah, whole...
It was like it was meant to be.
Yeah, yeah, it was like a positive.
Yeah, it was so lovely.
It was really lovely. It was nice, yeah.
What did you... learn about yourselves the most, you think, from that journey, from the whole journey, from the whole training and the North Sea and learning how to row and going off,
yeah,
and doing it?
I think it's just complete, you're capable of so much more than you think, and to have belief in yourself, and who cares if the dream you've got sounds ridiculous, mm, you should do it anyway, mm, I think, because we've all had a few ridiculous things since, mm, and we just do them now,
yeah.
And if we fail, we, yeah, fail. Who cares?
I think that's it. It's, yeah, failure, isn't, yeah, it? I think, yeah, so many people are scared of, yeah, doing something, mm, just in case they fail.
Yeah. Yeah.
And even if you had failed, look at what you've done, yeah, up to that point.
That's it's about having a go.
Yeah.
For me,
yeah,
it's about, yeah, having a go.
We wouldn't have seen it as a failure.
We hadn't have, no, gone to Antigua.
No.
I wouldn't have.
No.
I wouldn't have been, no, upset about it. No. I mean, I did Mont Blanc and got 300 metres off the top. And I just wasn't bothered. Mm-hmm. I was just so happy about what I'd done and what I'd achieved. Yeah. Really, really wasn't devastated. I thought I'd be devastated, mm, to get so close and not to be able to get to the top, but I really wasn't.
Mm. Did you do that before or after?
No, afterwards.
Right.
And I did some other mountains in Italy and then we did that. Mm. But I learned so much from doing it and I had such fun time, mm, that It was about just being there and having a go and being out of my comfort zone again.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I was perfectly happy.
Has it given you, did you come back with a sense of peace and calm, or has it really set something off in you that you do want to just keep trying to do different things? And
just that, really.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, I can imagine.
I think, yeah, yeah, I think for all of us, yeah. You know, I met this amazing trans woman on a International Women's Day panel, and she's asked me to ride across India, 1,000 miles. So I just went, yes, yeah. straight away. And then another friend asked me to go to Nepal in October, November. And you definitely, mm-hmm, now, I just say yes to everything. Mm. And then because I know it'll all just work out. And I've got that support mechanism now in place.
Yeah.
So everybody's just really, really supportive and and I know that they'll support me to do it. And I just feel really lucky.
Because you had this phrase throughout the whole thing, didn't you, that it'll be fine.
Yeah.
Which I love.
Yeah.
It always is, though. It's funnily,
yeah,
enough,
it is.
Generally speaking.
Yeah.
Everything works out.
It does.
So it is fine.
It's like I needed some money for something or other. And just before we went on the row, we had our boat in Leeds. There was a massive storm driving home. Do you remember that storm?
Yeah, yeah.
And I drowned my car under a bridge, literally drowned it. And it was a write-off. And then I got insurance money paid out. Mm. And it's just when I needed it at the right time. Mm. And then within a month, I'd gone off on the row and we had that money from the, yeah, car, mm, that I didn't need anyway for 3 months. So things do,
yeah, they work
always
out.
Work out.
Mm. Maybe not always how you expect.
Yes.
But they always work out. It's, yeah, always okay.
It's about being open, isn't, mm, it, to,
yes,
possibilities.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yes.
Do you think everybody's got it in them?
Yeah.
Ability to do different,
yeah,
adventures.
Yeah. But you've got to be passionate about what you want to do. Mm. So that's the key. So because we were all really passionate about rowing, it worked.
Mm.
For us now, it's very difficult. I don't think you two would want to ride across India, would you, maybe, on a horse?
No.
So it all depends. So for us, the next thing's really difficult to do because we all have to be passionate about it and really want to do it.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't want to run across a desert because, yeah, running's not my thing.
Mm.
So that's why it's, so I think the key for everybody is to do what you're passionate about. Yeah. And if you do what you're passionate about, you'll be successful.
Yeah. No, I think it's really inspiring because I do know I've got something in me that wants to do something. I haven't found the right thing yet, but yeah. when I do, I'll definitely yeah. do it.
Yeah.
And I just think it's so important that other women, particularly over 40,
yes.
get the opportunities to go out there and try different yeah, things exactly. because you don't know where, you know, you never yeah. knew no. this was going to lead to what you've no, experienced. No.
And try different activities and sports as well, because I think sometimes you don't know you're going to love it.
Yeah.
So don't think I don't think I'm going to like that. Yeah. Try it to find out first, because then you could find your passion, and that's the big thing.
But it's not all about activities and sports.
No, it's anything.
No. It can be anything. Yeah. It can be absolutely yeah.
anything that anything. Takes you out of your comfort zone.
Yeah, yeah.
Learning a language or anything. Yeah. It could be absolutely anything. Yeah. Mm. But that's something. Just try things, because you just don't know.
But you would, in theory, do another adventure together.
Yeah. I would definitely, yeah. definitely, which is really nice. Definitely I would. Mm. It's just finding that right thing.
Yeah. Well, I shall watch this space for that one. Thank you so much. You really are. Honestly, I can't tell you how inspiring the whole journey that you've been on is. It's amazing to meet you. I'm really, and I did feel, I was welling up when you got to the end and you drew in, because of everything that you'd achieved to get to that point. And it wasn't necessarily about that race for me. It was about everything that you'd done leading up to that. Yeah. It was just fabulous. Yeah. And I really would encourage women to read your story, because it's so inspiring.
It's the people, for me, it's not the race. It was the people we met.
Yeah.
That's changed my life,
yeah,
I think.
Yeah, completely. I can understand
that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Fabulous. Thank you so much. So, if you would like to know more about these fabulous women today, you can still find their book on Four Mums in a Boat. It's available on Amazon. And I've just listened to the Audible version and loved it. So, you can visit their website, yorkshirerowers.com. And you can also follow them on social media, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. So, please give them a follow. Final questions. What inspirational books would you recommend to people?
The ones I read very, very early on were the Dervla Murphy books, which, right. and I've just got another one out of the library at the weekend because I just love those. She was so ahead of her time. Mm. But then Deborah Searle's book is the book that I read that changed my life because it gave me the idea to do this.
Oh, right. Okay.
So that one too,
right.
I think.
I've just started reading Elizabeth Day's How to Fail, yeah, which I think, I've just started reading that, but that's, I'm really interested in that because I see failure as not a negative thing.
Yeah.
So she talks about how in her life, all the failure that she's had actually has been a positive thing.
Mm.
So I'm reading that at the moment and I'm really enjoying that.
Yeah, I'll look that one up. I love reading and finding everyone's reading.
And mine is probably, I haven't loads, but the one that I really enjoyed is one I've just finished, which is Michelle Obama's recent autobiography.
That.
And it's fabulous.
It
that's really,
really
inspiring. Yeah. So that's my flavour of the month.
Oh, brilliant. Yeah. I saw her at the O2, actually. I just after reading the book, and yeah, she was another person. I just was like, wow.
Yeah.
I could have listened to her.
Well, it's
for
a great
hours.
Story as well, that book. So, yeah, it's a lovely one.
What was your motivational music on board?
Very different musical tastes.
Yes. We really did. Although the one that we listened to all day, every day, for about the last month was the Mamma Mia soundtrack.
Oh, fabulous. Mm.
That was uplifting, wasn't it?
It was uplifting. And we knew the words to some of it.
Do you like Dolly Parton?
Oh, I love Dolly Parton.
Oh, God.
So who was in charge of music? Did you take it in turns?
We all had different... We all had our own iPods.
Right.
So, but we did use the stereo. Yeah, I liked Francis's iPod, but I was disappointed there was no Kate Bush on it, I remember.
No, there's no Kate Bush on it.
But yeah, I used to listen to your iPod.
And who inspires you?
Almost everyone we meet, really. Yeah. I think, and especially the people that we have met through the road.
Yeah.
There's been something from virtually everybody that we've taken away.
I meet people every day who inspire me. So yeah. Sue Pascoe, the trans woman, I had lunch with her last week. I was there for 3 hours and she was so inspiring listening to her journey.
Yeah.
James, who's got the stammer. I don't know if you've met James. Unbelievable. He has a really, really bad stammer. And he's now doing public speaking, even though he finds it really difficult. He does public speaking.
Mm.
He's such an amazing person. So I meet people every day who inspire me.
It's the unexpected, and that's what's the really brilliant bit. So I can remember doing a talk down with Jeanette, actually, and you just meet people. People come and talk to you, and they'll talk to you and tell you their story because they've heard your story.
Yeah.
And this wonderful lady came, and she was a fair bit older than us, and she came and told us about this trek that she'd done in it was the Arctic, and she'd done this marathon in the Arctic. And they did the last day in their bras, and it was all for a cause and everything else. This bunch of older ladies had done this amazing thing, but you look at her, you wouldn't have guessed, but she came and shared that story with us, and we're like, wow, you know. And it's people like that.
Yeah,
we
hear a lot of stories, yeah, don't we?
We do. People come and share them, and it is...
I think that's one of the reasons that spurred me on to do the podcast in the first place, is just to share stories with people, because we all get inspirational for each other.
Yeah, and everyone has a story.
They do.
Yeah, it's just that you don't always get to hear it.
No.
Yeah.
And women are very good at championing other women, I think. I think we get a bad press sometimes, but I think all the women I've met are all very enthusiastic, and we want to help people and inspire them and want them to do well. And so I think
our generation as well, because we're all in our 40s and 50s, I think there is this real surge, if you like, of women that are trying to do different things now, and we are a different generation to our parents, aren't we?
Yeah.
And it's lovely that we're all supporting each other.
Yeah.
It's fabulous.
Yeah.
So long may it continue.
Yes.
Thank you very much. So I'll be back in a fortnight with a double whammy of inspiration for you. I'm going to be talking to the fabulous Tricia Stewart, one of the originators and driving force behind the alternative WI calendar, which then went on to raise £5 million for the Bloodwise charity. So that's really exciting. I've got so many things to ask her. And I'll be going behind the scenes at the Macmillan Charity Fashion Show, and I'll be chatting to some of the women there that bravely volunteer each year to walk down the runway with no modelling experience and find out what they've gained from the experience and how it's changed their confidence and they've stepped out of the bubble in different ways. So I'm looking forward to hearing those. But I'm sure you'd agree that these four women are proof that it's never too late to embark on life-changing experiences, and they really epitomise what Out of the Bubble's message is perfectly. So if you've been inspired and motivated by hearing this story, please get in touch. I'd love to hear what you're all up to out there and how you're stepping out of your own bubble. See you next time. Thank you. Thank you for listening to this week's Out of the Bubble, and I hope it's left you feeling inspired. I'd love to hear from you. Who inspires you and why? Please get in touch. You can contact me via my website, rachelperumodel.com, or leave a message on the Anchor app. And if you're listening via iTunes, don't forget you can leave feedback. In the meantime, keep being fabulous.
The podcast you just heard was made using Anchor. Ever thought about making your own podcast? Anchor makes it really easy for anyone to get started. It's a one-stop shop for recording, hosting, and distributing podcasts. Best of all, it's 100% free. Sign up now at anchor.fm/new. That's anchor.fm/new to get started.